Hello and welcome back to the Fantasy Ramble by Energy Sport, the finest student-run fantasy football podcast in the country. My name is Jack Donnelly and we're here to bring you more insightful FPL tips for this weekend's batch of fixtures. As always, our league is still joinable on the official Premier League website and we're aiming for 58 members by the end of the season, so be sure to join with the code DPPRDJ. Also, be sure to follow us over on Twitter at Fantasy Ramble to see our host predictions for the full set of Premier League fixtures this weekend, not just the ones we're discussing here today. It's another three-man defence, but I'm glad that I'll be in the middle of these two because I feel like these two hosts will have a bit of... They could come together a wee bit after the Scottish Cup semi-final at the weekend there. Stu and Garvey's here, who was on the losing side of that. And so is Jamie McIntosh, who saw his Hearts make it to another Cup final. So he's not really had his platform to speak about it this week, Jamie, have you?
No, I missed the roundup on Monday and I missed extra time. I suppose it wasn't an extra time, was there? But no, I was certainly working on... Oh, did they do one in the end?
No, they weren't. No, I don't
there wasn't. I was working on Monday, so I didn't get the chance to come on and gloat, shall we say, about Saturday's result. But I saw Stu in class on Wednesday, but we didn't really touch on it, actually, to be honest with you. So it feels like it's the kind of moments... kind of past now, obviously, you know. And to be honest, there comes a point where it's just not that much of a surprise anymore, to be honest. I'm sure Struan feels something similar, but...
I suppose...
Did you guys know that camels have three eyelids? Sorry, I'm just talking about something irrelevant as well.
Were you saving that one?
Irrelevant to the ramble. I don't know how I can defend. I don't know what else I can say. To be perfectly honest, it wasn't. I don't really have anything else to say about that one.
How are we feeling?
You said your piece on Monday. You said your piece on Monday in the roundup. This is just my introduction. My little welcoming from Jack. So
no, that's
we need to get more Hibs fans.
No,
we need to get more Hibs fans on Radio Energy.
I don't think we do. I think we're all right just with you, Struan, because. We get the opinions of 1,800 Hibs fans coming out of you at any given opportunity. So you speak for the masses. You are the green voice in this.
The people's fan.
The fan of the people. How are we feeling coming into this weekend? Jamie, you've played your free hit, if I'm correct.
I have, yeah. I like the look of the fixtures. And I kind of opted for the kind of all eggs in one basket kind of tactic, which I think is kind of what the free hit is designed for, to be honest. It's not like the wild card where you're stuck with this team. It's the free hit is an opportunity to have a particularly strong game week, and it's a tool that you're supposed to use, I think, when you fancy a few teams to do well. So that's what I've done.
A lot of people are doing the same. I think Cameron Wan's still over at Extra Time and a partial contributor to this podcast. He's done the same, and a couple of my friends back home have also played a free hit. I considered it, but I don't know. I don't know. I feel like Christian Pulisic's now confirmed absence from tomorrow's game will in turn make me decide quite heavily that I'll just play my one transfer and then build from next week. But there's still a couple of hours to the deadline, so I could still make that decision, reverse that decision once again. With that being said, we've only got a couple of hours to the deadline, so we should probably crack on with talking about our premium picks, our first segment in premium picks, where we talk about the three biggest and most glamorous games of this game week, we would say. And there's no more glamorous a game than first versus second of last season. Manchester City taking on Liverpool on Sunday at 4:30 at the Etihad. It was wins for both teams last time out. Manchester City won away at Sheffield United, with Kyle Walker scoring the only goal in that game against his former club, while Liverpool battled hard to... coming back from a 1-0 deficit at home to West Ham, winning the game 2-1. It's league champions versus runners-up. It's always the fixtures that get talked about, and it's always talked about for this fixture particularly because it's Klopp versus Pep. It's the big two names of the league at the moment. And I feel like Pep's obviously going to want to prove a point a lot earlier than he did last season, Struan, because we saw Liverpool won the title after City lost to Chelsea. And then City went out and spanked them 4-0 the week after. So could we see Pep kind of coming into this game with the intent of we want to put our foot in the gas and get ahead as soon as possible this season?
Yeah, I think this game is massive, despite only coming in game week 8, I believe. I think it's not quite a title decider, but I think the confidence that it gives is massive. We saw it last season and said Liverpool got the win in that game. And from there, they just kicked on and dominated from that season. And and Man City wear out the title race fairly quickly, so I don't think they'll be wanting that again. And I think as well, when you look at the fixtures, Manchester City have played quite a few of the big teams already, notably Leicester and Arsenal. And I think once they get this game with Liverpool out of the way as well, they can get on a really good run. And they'll also, they may be without a striker really at the moment, but as Liverpool are without Van Dijk, I don't think they'll have too many issues going forward, given that last season they were able to put four past them in the post-lockdown game.
You say they're without a striker, but Gabriel Jesus did come back from injury. He came off the bench midweek against Olympiacos and scored on his return to make it 2-0. Jamie, it was convincing Champions League performances from both teams midweek. A really strong showing City beating Olympiacos at home 3-0, and a really stylish display from Liverpool 5-0 over Atalanta away in Italy. Diogo Jota being the main man in that fixture. How are we feeling coming into this game? Do you think it's going to be the same kind of stylish level of play from both teams, or do you think both of them are going to set in a bit more and try and just wait for mistakes, wait for the other team, sorry, to make the mistake to allow them to go up and get the goal?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I really don't know how this game's gonna pan out. Liverpool were excellent during the week. I think Atalanta were quite poor, but I think Liverpool made them look poor. You know, obviously they are a very good team, Atalanta, and Liverpool just made them look bang average. Obviously, the big talking point in terms of Liverpool team news is whether Diogo Jota is going to retain his place in the team from the midweek starting 11, or if Bobby Firmino is going to come back in. Going by what Jurgen Klopp has kind of said so far, you know, he's defended Firmino whenever kind of press have asked Klopp about Firmino's form. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Firmino did start this game. But I would love to see Jota start in a game of this magnitude, and I think it's real testament to the character of Jota that he's kind of managed to work his way into this Liverpool front three. Because look, I mean, if you'd said 12 months ago that would you know this front three be getting changed, you know, you would think like, goodness, who could walk into this, you know, Liverpool front three and rip it up and take somebody's place. And I think that's what Jota's done. He's done really well so far in his short time at Liverpool to give Jurgen Klopp a decision to make in terms of who to play through the middle, in the middle of Salah and Mane. But I would love to see Jota start. But for me, the main talking point is whether Bobby Firmino or Diogo Jota gets the nod.
I think it'd be really harsh to drop Jota, to be quite honest with you. I mean, scoring a hat trick away at Atalanta, I mean, I do agree that Liverpool made Atalanta look bad, but even still, it's a Champions League hat trick at the end of the day. Like, there are
Absolutely.
not a lot of players that can say that they've got one, and I think for him to be dropped for Bobby Firmino just because it's a Premier League game away to Manchester City, I don't think it'd be fair to the player who has been playing head and shoulders above what Firmino's been playing this season. So,
Yeah, definitely.
and I feel like I want to address it because I get called out personally. My friend Fraser messaged me after Jota scored the hat trick, and he said, "Was it not you that said that it was a stupid signing back in the summer?" And I'll go on record to say that I didn't have a problem with Jota as a player. I had a problem with the fact that Liverpool paid more for him than they did any of their other front three for him to effectively, from what I saw at the time, sit on the bench and provide cover for them. But what you said, it looks to be a fantastic £45 million investment, to be honest, because he's come in, he's got bags of ability, and he's been able to displace the natural order that has Bobby Firmino starting through the middle. So I'm a big fan of Jota just now, and it helps that he's a very cheap option on fantasy, whether you want to stick with him and trust that he will play a lot more than Firmino in the next couple of weeks anyway. I think he's 6.5 million as a midfielder compared to Firmino's 9-odd million as a striker. And I think Stuart, was it us that said that Firmino was the biggest waste of money in fantasy at the start and now in our previews, or was it someone else?
I think I definitely would have had him in there as a big waste, to be fair.
Someone else I just want to touch on, Jamie, you mentioned team selection. Reece Williams has been playing the past couple of games in defence for Liverpool. He seemed to slot in quite well against West Ham, and all the Liverpool players and the manager, they were all praising him. But it's one thing playing well against West Ham. Surely he's up against, he's swimming with the sharks against the likes of Sterling, De Bruyne, and Gabby Jesus.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't think he's actually played in the Premier League this season. I could be wrong.
Aye, West Ham last week, I think.
Oh, of course, yeah. That was just It says Flash said he was on the bench. That must be wrong
Unless
then.
am I wrong?
I think you are. According to Flash
Reece
Scores, that
Williams is the younger guy.
Phillips and Gomez played centre back apparently.
Aye,
West Ham.
That's what I meant. Sorry, aye, Phillips. I don't know why I said Reece Williams. I had Reece Williams
so
in my
you're
notes.
Asking me, are you asking me about Reece Williams or Phillips?
I'm asking you about, Nathaniel Phillips, that's who I'm asking you about. I don't know why I said Reece Williams just was, I think it's because he played midweek.
That's what I was looking at as well, was the Atalanta game.
That's supposed to pair them,
okay,
because it could be either one of the two that plays at the weekend.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Regardless of which one you're actually talking about, obviously, it is going to be a huge step up for whichever one of them it is. I mean, you know, everybody knows that Manchester City kind of front three, front four, if you like, is just brilliant. It's up there with the best in the league, obviously, alongside Sunday's opponents, Liverpool. So, you know, it is a huge test for him. But ultimately, you need to sort of play in these sort of games to if you're going to improve. And Phillips is 23 now, so. You know, if he is going to kind of break through, then, you know, this is the time for him to kind of come out and put a statement out. The fact that, you know, I certainly hadn't heard of him before until a few months ago. So, you know, this is the time where if he is going to break through, this is his chance. So, you know, he needs to make sure that if Jurgen Klopp puts the faith in him, because, you know, if it is Phillips or Williams, whichever one of the two it's going to be, they need to make sure that they take this opportunity while Fabinho and Van Dijk are injured and try and, you know, whether they're going to get into this Liverpool team long term is obviously another matter, but at least put themselves in the shop window so that if Klopp isn't going to take notice, then maybe some other clubs might sit up and take notice of the pair of them. So really intriguing as well, though, alongside the Firmino and Jota decision. A couple of big decisions for Klopp to make, definitely.
No, absolutely. I completely agree. We'll make some predictions for this one, more for a scoreline rather than our starting 11s, because we could be here for the entire podcast debating who's going to start for City and Liverpool. But, Struan, how do we feel that this one's going to pan out in terms of a scoreline?
I've gone 2-1 Liverpool. I think it'll be a really, really close game. Maybe a last-minute decider, I think, could genuinely. I think Liverpool will get the win, and I've tipped Diogo Jota for being the man of the match. I think he's really going to take to this game, especially the form he's on at the moment. Wow. And I think we've seen as well, despite the fact that Guardiola has improved that defence, you know, the Liverpool front three is that good, I think they'll struggle.
I'll make the point about the defence when I come on to my prediction. But Jamie, how are we seeing this one go?
Yeah, I really don't know, as I said earlier. I think, you know, it could just go either way. I've put it down for 2-2 I'm going to go with. I don't know. I think I like Struan's shout with Jota. If he gets the nod anyway, I could see him causing City a few problems, just like he did during the week in Italy. But obviously, whether Klopp starts him is another matter altogether. So I don't know, though. I'm really looking forward to the game. I think it should be a very good game, and I think there should be goals in it if you look at both teams going forward. I know City are missing Aguero, but you know they've still got other players around him, hopefully, that can supply presumably Jesus who will start. I know Torres has obviously been getting the nod, but if Jesus is fit, you would expect him to start anyway, but that's another matter as well. Just to bring it back into team news.
Just
again,
to bring it back to team news. For me, I think I'm also echoing Jamie's prediction. I think I'm going to go for 2-2 as well. Reason being, I feel like Liverpool defence is poor at the moment. Well, poor in comparison to what it is usually, and I feel like City are going to be able to exploit that, but their defence is still really leaky, because Ruben Diaz has been a good player for them, and he's played just about every minute since he'd come in from Benfica, but they've still not been able to find a player to partner him effectively. Aymeric Laporte's not played really much of anything this season, which is a surprise for me, considering, well, in my opinion, he's the best centre-back that City have at the club. Kyle Walker's been playing well. He's had a good couple of weeks, but I still feel like he's going to struggle against Sadio Mane on that right hand side, or left hand side for Mane, which is fair to say, because absolutely any defender in the world would struggle against Mane. And Nathan Ake's just really not lived up to that price tag that he's come in for, about 40 million, and he's still kind of, you can understand why he was part of a defence that got Bournemouth relegated last season, which is a shame because I did really like him as a player. So I just feel like there's no real way to spin it for either team having an overall advantage, but I think there's going to be goals in it regardless, and I think it will be a box office game without a box office price, we'll say, because the box office prices are reserved for diddy games like West Ham and Fulham for whatever reason. We'll come on to the second game of our premium picks, and that is going to be Everton versus Manchester United on Saturday, 12:30, lunchtime kickoff at Goodison Park. It was a win for... it was a loss for both teams, sorry. Sorry, I got mixed up there. Everton lost away at Newcastle, Dominic Calvert-Lewin getting them a late consolation goal as he continued his hot streak of form, while Manchester United lost at home to Arsenal for the first time in 14 years, with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang scoring a penalty, perhaps fittingly on the 69th minute. I don't know about you boys, but I'm seeing a potential fade away from Everton, considering the start that they've had. The team kind of looks a wee bit Willie McIntosh and incapable without James Richarlison and Digne in that side. Granted, two of the three will be back for this game at Old Trafford, Goodison Park, sorry, at the weekend. But is it a big concern, Struan, that Everton really don't have the quality and depth to be able to consistently put out the level of performances that they have done in the earlier parts of the season?
Yeah, I think the starting 11 that Everton can put out, I think, is up there with the best in the league. I think it's a really strong team, but I wouldn't even say they've got 12 good players. You know, I think they really struggle past that, which is quite incredible given the amount of money and players that they've signed in recent years, especially the number of number 10s that they've brought in as well. But I think it's almost Ancelotti has starting to go through that squad now and realise, you know, some of these players just aren't up to the scratch. Because one of the ones that I did find interesting was letting Theo Walcott go to Southampton. Mm. And as we saw with Richarlison out, you know, the lack of options on the width is pretty incredible. You know, you've got Alex Iwobi and that's about it. And that last, you know, then Kofi Sigurdsson starts getting played out wide. So I think it is a real concern for Everton that if they do suffer injuries or suspensions, which is very likely, there's a few injury-prone players in that team, that they will really struggle to maintain form.
I think it's the point as well, they don't really have a natural replacement for Calvert-Lewin, who is their main source of goals, and one of their only source of goals, especially with Richarlison's suspension. So I feel like if he goes down at all, Everton's season could just kind of crumble from that point, because I don't even know if Everton have a striker to replace. Chink Tosun?
Tosun, yeah.
They sold Moyes Keane to PSG, and I know he had quite a poor first season.
A loan, if I'm right.
Yeah, it's just a season on loan. But I still think it's quite a strange decision that even though he had a bad season, surely he's better than Tosun or another option. You know, I could definitely see Kofi Sigurdsson or James being played in that sort of role at some point.
A false nine, maybe.
Yeah, I just don't see the options. Maybe there is somebody in the academy that's coming through.
Maybe.
That we don't know about yet.
I mean, Moise Keane, I think he went to PSG and then he got two braces back to back.
I was going to say, he seems to be doing all right, actually, considering his original target when he signed for Everton. I think he might have already hit his target for Everton
that original
at PSG
target.
Already.
It makes me laugh so much. That was one of the best post-signing interviews I've ever seen.
What was it, six goals or
seven,
something?
Seven. You're underselling seven him, Jamie. He's aiming for seven. He's aiming for seven at least. Yeah,
a magnificent
you would think if DCL does go down, you would want someone at least young, lively and hungry to actually get goals on the board, like Moise Keane, rather than Chink Tosun, who's there for the Angry Birds money and nothing else.
It's pretty incredible that like a club like Everton do consistently produce fantastic strikers and then tend to consistently sell them away. And I think if that does happen to somebody like Calvert-Lewin at the end of the season, I think it'd be an astronomical transfer fee, but I think they'll be in real trouble if another... I can't see any Premier League team at the moment coming in for him, but I think if he's sold, suspended, injured, I think that's a massive, massive loss.
I don't know if I could see him going to anyone. That's the thing. Like, I don't know if anyone...
I was going
to
say, you know, Everton have obviously got this kind of ambition now where, you know, they're really trying to catapult themselves back into the kind of the big, what, six, seven, eight, whatever, top... however many teams you want to call
trophy.
It. Well, exactly, yeah. Is there a better club that, Calvert-Lewin would kind of go to? Because, Liverpool aren't going to take him, obviously. Tottenham, you wouldn't have thought. Chelsea, no. Arsenal, probably not. City, Man United. What's the kind of alternative? Vardy's getting on a bit. Is Leicester going to be an option in a couple of years?
Seems like a sideways move for a Calvert-Lewin, though, when you think of it like
Yeah,
that.
I don't know. I just think, we speak about other clubs, but but clearly what Calvert-Lewin has showed is that, he is a good player, but he can't carry the team. He needs to have good players around him, obviously, because we've seen with Richarlison and James missing, then that he starts to struggle, which was probably kind of what we started to see with Calvert-Lewin last season, and that's why a lot of people had doubts about Calvert-Lewin, us included.
We did, yeah, you're right.
He's not the type of striker who'll make a goal for himself, is he? He's much more of a fox in the
I'm
box, you
exact. I
know.
was exa thinking the exact same. He
I think
needs
just
the
about all
decent
of his goals
service.
have been in the 6-yard box this season.
And he can score all sorts of goals. Like, he can score with both feet. He can score with his head. He can outscore from stupid angles and things like that. But he needs someone to provide the final ball for him. He's not gonna.
Classic number nine, isn't it?
He's not gonna
As the saying
do,
goes.
say, what Timo Werner did for his first goal against Southampton. He's not gonna pick up the ball on the left, drive into the box, pass three players, and then slot it home. He needs someone to be
So you're
able to.
bringing up Chelsea, is it?
It might be Jamie, actually, yeah. But no, do you know
Or
what I mean?
Martial against Bournemouth when he came in from the left.
Exactly. So he's not gonna have one of these moves where he's a lot more like a Harry Kane rather than a Bobby Firmino, say. If that makes any sense. I'm not sure if it does in the context.
Not a lot,
More of a
no, not a
Shearer than
lot.
an Henry.
More of a finisher than a creator. There we go. That's it.
Yeah, there you go. Got there in the end.
Got there in the end.
Nailed it.
Moving away from Calvert-Lewin, there's someone else I want to talk to you about, Jamie, in this Everton squad. And it's Alan.
Alan,
How have you viewed Alan? Because I feel like you named him as your potential flop of the season, of the transfer window, when we were
I
doing
did,
our
yeah.
Premier League preview podcast, just in lieu of the season commencing again. How have you viewed him? How have you viewed him in the last few weeks? I mean, it was after the first week of the first fixture that Everton had, that 1-0 win against Tottenham Hotspur. You were very quick to say, I made a mistake, and I think Højbjerg's my flop now. After that one
Yeah.
performance, but has that sentiment echoed with you throughout, or have you kind of been watching him a bit haphazardly, still knowing that he has the potential to just throw it all away?
Yeah, I think the kind of last two games where obviously we've seen Everton have been poor without kind of Richarlison and without Rodriguez, but I think that was kind of the Alan that I expected to see. I fought against Newcastle, Everton struggled against Newcastle, but I thought he struggled as well, and he's got guys like Andre Gomez and Sigurdsson kind of alongside him, and not directly alongside him in the kind of holding midfielder's role, but in the midfield kind of nevertheless. And between the kind of three of them, it's not an awful lot of legs to have in midfield in the Premier League. And when I did kind of say that Alan would be my flop, I was kind of alluding to the kind of pace that the English game can be played at, and I think it's much quicker than what he's used to in Serie A. And I highlighted Jorginho. Obviously, when Jorginho came into Chelsea under Maurizio Sarri, it was he took a while to get going, and it
Some
was
would
just
say he
kind of
still
a
hasn't.
I suppose so, but he did seem to kind of pick up a wee bit and then kind of maybe dip off again currently. But I don't know, it's just all about adapting to the pace of the game. I think he's played 6 games in the league now, and he's kind of showing the good, the bad, and the ugly, probably you could say, because I think he has had some good games. I think the game against Brighton and a game against Tottenham on the opening day are certainly the two that kind of stand out for me. But the Southampton and the Newcastle game, where Everton collectively have been below their what we'd seen previously anyway. I think that was kind of more what I expected to see from him. So yeah, I think the good, the bad, and the ugly is what I've seen from him so far. But I think, I don't know, it's just about adapting to the Premier League style, I think. So if he can do that, then I still think he'll have a successful time at Everton. But if he doesn't, then he'll be a flop.
It's still quite early in the season. I feel like I keep coming back to this with every point I'm making about kind of looking on and things like that. We're only eight game weeks into the season, so time is obviously going to be a massive factor in seeing how these players do end up playing for the respective clubs. We've not talked about Everton's opponents yet, and I feel like Struan has been expecting this for a little while since I told him that we were going to be covering his club. United, it's just bad just now for Man United. There's no real happy spin to put on it. It's just not good. I mean, they granted Istanbul Başakşehir their first ever Champions League win on was it Tuesday night or Wednesday night?
It was Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, thank you. Demba Ba scoring against Man United just like it's 2012 again. They've conceded twice. The defence was absolutely all over the place. Coming into this game, they'll also have played twice since Everton last played a game of football, and I feel like that tiredness could potentially be a factor. I'm not sure. Struan might know a bit more than me. And there obviously has been a lot of talk about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer with not so much the media, because it's not really been the media, the big outlets like Sky, because they all really seem to be in his corner. It's more been kind of independent outlets like us who have been a bit more, I suppose, neutral in their opinion, in the sense that we could all see the struggles that he's facing and potentially it could be a time to go. But United have come at themselves and said that they're backing him and they see him as a long-term man behind the wheel. But Struan, talk to me about United just now. How is it for you as a fan? Because I have a feeling you've got a fair bit to say here, and we will let you ramble fantasy.
It's a terrible start for United. Of course, there is exaggeration to it with a club like United. You know, every defeat is massive. Every victory is massive. You know, overreactions to just about everything. But I do feel it is a very, very poor point at the moment. You know, with a game in hand, you know, United can actually still make pretty good progress in the table, which I'm sure Oil will be pointing out. But the way this season has gone is just, it's almost the entirety of Solskjaer's time at United summed up. You know, the start wasn't great. You know, there was potential coming in at the start of the season. It didn't go great. You know, unbelievable results against PSG and Leipzig, two of the best sides in Europe from the Champions League last season. Completely outclassed them from a tactical point of view and just the in-game management. And then it's almost like when you're listening to that Leipzig game, you have to say to yourself, we'll win today, but then we have to lose to Arsenal and Istanbul Başakşehir. Mm. And it was the same with PSG, you know, you'll do this, but then you just won't play against Chelsea at the weekend. It's never the same consistency. It's very much a roller coaster that it just seems to be never ending under Solskjaer at Man United. Every time you think you're going up, you just eventually come back down and you just can't stay up. It's very horrible, but it's just the way football is at the moment, to be honest. I think without fans, we're seeing some crazy results. We're seeing some crazy things. A club like United, you know, the standards have slipped astronomically. You know, it's the anniversary of Alex Ferguson being appointed, and you just kind of think that it's 7 years ago, you know, United still wouldn't have won a Premier League title. There'd be a few questions asked what's happened, and this does go beyond Solskjaer. You know, there does have to be questions asked of the board. If he is sacked, that's the fourth manager that Ed Woodward will have sacked, and consequently a fifth manager appointed. So, you know, maybe you have to ask questions of that. But at the same time, the current Man United squad, in my opinion, I've said, is, I think it's the best since Sir Alex Ferguson, the actual squad group of players. I think it's a very good team. I genuinely do think the way this season is going, they probably could challenge for the title just player quality alone if they could get some kind of run. But under Solskjaer, I can't see that happening. And I think the Istanbul game just kind of showed that even a Champions League run at this point in the season is very unlikely.
I mean, when he's on a run like this, is the blame solely with him? Because, I mean, you make the point that with this squad, someone else could be challenging for the league title. And I don't entirely disagree. I think it's a very talented squad that United do have. But surely there has to be a point where it can't just be Solskjaer's fault.
Yeah, I think the players do need to take a lot of the criticism on for themselves. I think we've shown, you know, there's some very silly errors, and it's always the manager. You know, it's easier to blame and sack one manager than it is 23 men. It's never easy to just single out players. Although I do think there have been quite a few singled out in the likes of Harry Maguire. We've seen so much criticism this season as it's gone on. Martial getting sent off has received a lot. I mean, Pogba doesn't go two games without getting a massive amount of criticism, even when he doesn't play. It is down to the players a lot. But I feel one of the things that I was thinking is when Solskjaer first took over, we saw, you know, you look through the team and the team that Mourinho left, and you had, you know, Ashley Young and Antonio Valencia as fullbacks. You had Smalling, Jones, Rojo, Lindelof coming in as a centre half. Matic, Herrera in midfield, and you had Lukaku and Sanchez up front. And that same team, you know, that quote-unquote threw Jose under the bus is mostly gone. And coming in from Ollie, you know, he spent £150 million on that defence. And the three players in Telles, Wan-Bissaka and Harry Maguire. And it did do well last season, but, you know, it's hard to justify £80 million for Harry Maguire looking at it now. And at the time, you know, that's a terrible signing, but I think that's just the way it is. I think the squad now has improved, but we're still seeing the same issues. Different squads, different day, same issues. Same lack of creativity, despite now having Bruno Fernandes, Paul Pogba, Donny van de Beek, than what it was with Andreas Pereira and Fellaini and Lingard. Mm-hmm. There's slightly more, but it's still the same issue. Still the same defensive mistakes, despite, you know, I would say upgrading Valencia to Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah.
And Ashley Young to Shaw, and it's just the same sort of mistakes. You know, has Harry Maguire an upgrade on Chris Smalling? I'd personally say yes, and we're still seeing the same mistakes that we'd see from them. And I just think in that sense that I just don't think the players know what's happening. You know, it's individual brilliance time and time again with Solskjaer, and if you're relying basically on Bruno Fernandes or Marcus Rashford to produce some brilliance, Martial, you know, there's no system in place. It's you get the ball, you give it to him, try and score yourself a goal, and we'll maybe hit them on the counter-attack. Because we've seen some fantastic results against the big teams. I mean,
yeah, uh-huh.
And credit to him, he beat Chelsea, Manchester City, Leicester, sorry, home and away last season. And those are all teams, you know, competing for the top four last season. But the way he won those games was very much sit back, catch them on the counter-attack, which I'm not hitting that. That's a very smart way to play in games like that. It's very effective. But then when you play against a team who does that to you, there's no breaking them down. We've seen different players, different systems. You know, he's been in the job 2 years, and I don't think he, A, knows his best formation, or B, knows his best 11, which, let's be real, you compare it to Mikel Arteta, who's already won two trophies, if you include the Shield. He knows his system. He's made it work. You know, there's defensive errors. He's changed the system. He's made it work for him. He completely outclassed United on the day, and I would argue that if you look at the two teams on Sunday, I think United's team on paper was much better than Arsenal's. But when you watch that game, you would struggle to think that. And I think that's the difference. Once you kind of compare another team like Arsenal, who have brought in a manager like that, you then have to wonder, the long-term quote-unquote plan with Ole at the moment looks a very, very long-term plan and not a few years. Because when United had appointed him back in 2018, it was, which was quite premature following the caretaker, you would have hoped that after last season as well, you know, managing to finish third, which, let's be completely real, was a very lucky third, you'd hope at least this season they would kick on. And instantly, the first game of the season, Crystal Palace, the same issues. Brighton should have been a defeat. It's the same issues that are not being fixed. And then he'll pull a massive result out of the bag against PSG and against Leipzig. Mm-hmm. And it's just the same issues time and time again. Every single time it looks like, oh, the questions have to be asked. There's a fantastic result comes in. And that's partially when I would also say to the players, you know, what's happening? Why are they turning up in these games and not in the others? But I think I've said my piece there.
You've said your piece, and you said it very well, to be honest. I can't disagree with anything of what you've just said. That may be one of the most insightful rambles that we've seen on this show, to be honest. It was a very well-made point, Stuart, to be quite honest with you.
I've had 2 years to be analysing and discussing it. Probably
analyze the ins and outs of the problems from Manchester United.
Yep, I do think I admit even to myself I'm over exaggerating. You know, it's not a terrible situation. We're not about to get relegated or anything like that. But I think,
but in perspective, for the size.
Yeah,
of the
I just don't understand this long term plan, because every single time it looks like there's a run, it looks like things are going well, it's just instantly back to square one. You know, it's one step forward, one step back. An elite club should be taking three forward, none back. You should never be having to go back the way, especially when you're in a rebuild and stuff like this, with a wage bill, the money spent. You know, I do agree that Ole hasn't been backed. I saw a very good tweet that in the summer, you know, Ole and Lampard, both similar positions, came in, actually finished on the same point tally of 66, got Champions League football. You know, the Chelsea board rewarded Lampard. United didn't really reward Ole, and that does give me the opinion that I don't know if the board have faith in the same way that Chelsea have faith in Lampard. I don't know if even they believe that this quote-unquote long-term plan is going to happen, because there has been a lot of money spent. And if you look at somebody like Harry Maguire, 80 million, the board are probably thinking, you know, can we justify what was it, 120 for Sancho, another one player, but upwards nearly £100 million. You know, it's that's not exactly going to improve the team. And even if you if Man United had signed him, I don't think a single result this season would have changed.
Like I'll give you that point in saying that Ollie's not been backed. I do agree that, but for me, I don't know if it's fair to compare it to Lampard in the sense of getting backed, because Lampard didn't have couldn't sign players. He didn't sign players for two transfer windows. One of the ones he literally wasn't allowed to. So he had that money sitting basically waiting for him this summer, whereas Ollie spent some money on Bruno in January, and then tried to go back from over, but I don't know. I do see where you're coming from, though.
No, I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, but we'll get on to some predictions of this game, because I feel like we've not heard from Jamie. I think Jamie might have just switched the darts on or something like that in the past 10 minutes.
I'm still here, don't worry.
Good, I'm glad.
To be fair, I would switch off listening to me.
Jamie, how do we feel like it's going to go on Saturday afternoon?
I don't really know, to be honest, because I mean, I've watched Everton the last two games they've played now. I think they were on Super Sunday or something when they played Southampton, and then I think possibly similar actually against Newcastle. I think they played on Sunday as well. Both very poor, as I alluded to earlier. United, you never really know what you're going to get with United, as Struan's just highlighted in great detail. Ollie's job is under scrutiny, and I think he said earlier in the week to me that whenever Ollie's job is under scrutiny, he pulls out a big result. Yeah. So This is a big game, you know, for both teams. But you know, on the pitch for you know both teams, this is a big game. But obviously for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, it is a big game as well, in terms of his future at the club. So I'm going to go with a United win by 2-1. I'm not saying it's going to be a classic game. I'm not saying it's going to be a classic performance. But I think United will get the job done, and I think they'll win by 2-1.
Struan, how do you feel?
Yeah, I'm going for a 2-0 Manchester United win. I think, as I said, these are the games that under Solskjaer United do win. When the chips are down, when the pressure's on, they pull it out of the bag. And I've gone for Dr. Marcus Rashford, MBE, to be the man of the match. The player to watch.
The one light in all the darkness is that Marcus Rashford continues to be an outstanding human being. That is the one takeaway we can have from United this season. I've gone for 1-1, to be honest. Mm. I feel like it could come down to quite a bit of a midfield battle, as we kind of touched on. Everton's midfield is kind of very much hit or miss. It can perform very well, as we saw in the first couple of weeks, but then the last two, we've seen it wane and we've seen it go through real struggles. But I feel like the pairing of Alan and Abdoulaye Doucouré could have a real impact on how well someone like Bruno Fernandes could play. I feel like they could really just suffocate him in the middle of the park and prevent him from impacting the game a lot. So with that, yeah, no, I think one all draw. That's what I'm gonna go for, with Alan being the key man, because I don't know. That'll probably come back to bite me. We'll probably see the Alan of recent weeks, but
can I fire a question to you two at this?
Feel free.
Ready? So if Everton were to beat Manchester United, do you think that Solskjaer should be sacked?
Should be or would be?
Should.
He wouldn't be. I know he wouldn't be, but I'm not sure if he should be or not.
I think regardless of the result, he keeps his job, but it's interesting. Jamie?
I think, I'm looking at the teams. I'm looking at the table, sorry, just now. And Manchester United sit in 15th place. Okay, I think they've played a game less than 16 or 17 teams in the league. I think they've got a game in hand against somebody. I'm not quite sure who it's against. You might be better placed to reveal
It'll
that.
It'll be either Aston Villa, Man City or Burnley.
Aye.
Right. So yes, but they're still in 15th place. They've won two out of the six games, which isn't particularly inspiring, really.
And one of them was the Brighton win.
you're right, and you know, I'm looking at the table as I say, and if United do lose this game, Brighton are playing at home tonight. I fancy them to get the win, and if United subsequently lost, that would leapfrog Brighton above Manchester United, so that would be another place they would drop. So I don't really know. I'm not in a particularly good position to judge the Manchester United goings on, but I think it's certainly not good enough at the moment. And if you solely blame Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for the kind of failings at Manchester United over the last kind of, well, over his tenure at the club, then yes, I think he should be sacked. But I think the problems are a little bit deeper at Manchester United than just the manager, or the, as Struan's alluded to, the fourth manager under since Sir Alex
Fourth manager
Ferguson.
in 7 years.
Yeah, so I think that tells you quite a lot.
No, definitely. I kind of almost see United this season as a bit like Chelsea's 2015-16 season,
Yeah.
third under Mourinho, which saw him end up in the club in the relegation zone before being sacked after losing to Leicester on their way to the title. Gus Hiddink came in to try and steady the ship, ended up finishing 10th. I can kind of see a bit of that coming along, like not in terms of like the way the team is playing, but just in kind of the overall opinion of the club and the overall attitude towards Manchester United at the moment. Just there doesn't seem to be any good and going on at Manchester United just now, and it was the same for Chelsea back then. So with that logic, middle of December, if it keeps going this way before Ole goes.
It's
But
just going to be a bit of a write-off of a season, you know, for United. You know, is it just, do you have to, you have no expectation that United will do anything then this season, Struan?
well, it's as I mentioned earlier on about, over exaggerating and stuff like that. United are they are in a position to be able to mount a comeback, having already played Tottenham, Chelsea, Arsenal, and will consequently play Everton this weekend. That's four massive teams that have already been played. I think Palace I would also include in that just because of how good they are against the top six. And we saw last season, I'm not trying to defend Ollie and the comment he made, but it was an even worse start last season. And the post-lockdown, arrival of Bruno Fernandes, the run was just incredible. And there is a possibility that would happen. But at the moment, I genuinely have no real expectations, despite one of the most open seasons that we've seen so far. And that, you could probably name about five teams, six teams at the moment who could go on a run and win the title. I don't think I'd have Man United as one of them, but that's not to say there's an FA Cup or a League Cup or anything in there. And I did recently say on a podcast as well, United will be lucky to be in Europe next season the way things are going. So it's just very difficult. The it's so difficult to predict United's consistency because it's honestly it's as Fabregas once said, football is just unbelievable.
I'm not sure that's a direct quote, but
No, he used another word in there, but
Sky Sports didn't show it. Sky Sports weren't happy with him, so yeah, good, maybe a good idea to leave it out. But we'll move on to the last of our premium picks. It meant that we're still on the first segment of the show at this point in time. Leicester versus Wolves, Sunday 2 p.m. at the King Power Stadium. Wins for both last weekend. Leicester scored four past Leeds in a 4-1 victory. Wolves sat solid in a 2-0 win against Palace. Vardy are back, and it seems so are Leicester after a couple of dodgy results and kind of a wee bit of struggles that had a question. Leicester, Vardy comes back, gets a win against Arsenal, and is back in this one and is instantly involved. Tielemans could potentially also be a very clever pickup for your fancy Premier League midfield, especially if he is on the penalties for when Vardy is not on the pitch. What do we make of Leicester's performance against Leeds on Monday night, I believe it was? That any big takeaways to make from it?
It's been
Yeah, they've been
good.
excellent.
Yeah. Big credit to Brendan Rodgers. I think recently in the same against the Arsenal, the game's game plan has just gone to perfection, really.
It doesn't surprise me, to be honest. I did have it down as a Leeds win, but you know, kind of after the game, you know, I thought it was pretty similar to how Leicester played at the Etihad. Not so much at the Emirates. I didn't see that game because I think it was box office, but certainly the game against Manchester City, they just kind of sliced through them and looked like they could score every time they went forward. And it was the same on Monday night. Leeds, you know, obviously when we discussed before the season started, we said that Bielsa's style will probably work against some teams and other teams it won't work as well against. And yeah, I think Leicester and Vardy in particular, one of those players that, yeah, you probably get found out with that. I mean, Robin Koch, obviously the first goal's an individual error really from Robin Koch, and Leeds looked really shaky actually after that. There was a couple of times that I can't remember what the goalkeeper's called, and that's terrible, but
Mesley,
he had a couple of
yeah.
he had a couple of dodgy dodgy kicks as well under a little bit of pressure from Vardy. And I don't know, there was a time where I was kind of watching it in the first half and thinking, Jesus, just clear your lines, what are you doing? Because you know they were kind of under the cosh a wee bit, and they looked a bit shaky, and they were kind of the architects of their own downfall really in the end. They got the goal back, and it looked, I kind of fancied them to go and snatch something, but Leicester scored again, and it was a pretty comfortable win, in all honesty, to be honest. So
It
fair
was.
play to them, and I expect them to win this one just now. I'll just give you my prediction, and I've gone with a 2-0 to Wolves victory. 2-0 to Wolves, sorry, 2-0 to Leicester
Oh,
victory.
2-0 to Leicester. Oof.
Yeah, fancy them this weekend.
I don't know how this one's going to go personally. We'll take a look at Wolves as well, because they've looked solid for a couple of weeks now. They're still sitting nice and pretty in the table in a position they probably favour finishing in. Nelson Semedo has been a fantastic addition to replace Matt Doherty as he moved on to Spurs, being able to provide at both ends of the pitch and looking very, very good throughout. Max Kilman has been a kind of gem that's been unearthed this season, displacing Roman Saiss, who was, I think, the fifth most picked player in fantasy, at least in terms of defenders, because of his price tag being quite low, and he seemed to be getting a lot of clean sheets. But now he's been displaced. It's very up in the air over whether Kilman keeps playing or whether Saïss comes back in. But Struan, what do we make of Wolves? Jimenez hasn't been scoring all too much as he like in the same way that he was last season. But Wolves are still sitting resolute enough to be able to force goals through the likes of Pedence or Pedro Neto. So how do we see them coming into this one?
I think Wolves had quite a good start to the season, to be honest. I can't watch the football. I think it's incredibly boring, to be honest, but it is effective to a degree. And as you said, I think Jimenez has been quite a big loss. No, I say that like he's been injured or he's suspended, but he's just not quite been on the same form that we have seen. I'm sure he will pick up again later on. Once Adama Traoré comes back into that front three, I think they'll really hit off. Their connection's fantastic. But I do fancy Leicester to win this. I think they're in really good form. I think Leicester are actually going quite under the radar this season. I think they've been fantastic.
It's probably quite good for them. They'd probably appreciate that kind of flying low and not really being paid much attention to, I suppose. But that's an interesting point you bring up about Adama Traoré, because as far as I know, he's not injured. And I just can't see why he's not starting games. I mean, is there something going on there that we're just not aware of? Or do you think Nuno Espirito Santo is just putting a lot more faith in Pedro Neto and Pedence to lead the line rather than Adama Traoré?
It's really strange with Trout, because there's just periods when he just gets dropped to the bench for a few games, and then he comes back in and he does great, and then he plays for consistently, and then he's just randomly dropped and kept to the side again. But we know that Nuno, he likes to work with about 16 odd players at most. He doesn't really change his system around that much, but maybe he's just trying to find the best balance at the moment, especially with a new fullback in on the right hand side, and the kind of uncertainty over the left with Johnny's injury. I have been quite impressed with Neto, to be fair. I think he's a really talented young player, but I think it's just working out the system, to be honest. I'd personally play Traoré. I think he's such a good footballer, but it's just so exciting to watch. He's one of those players that when he gets the ball, you just stand back and watch him. When he's playing against you, every time he gets the ball, you just worry about everything he can do.
100%,
He's so talented. So I'm not quite sure. Maybe he does pick up injuries from time to time. Running at the speed that he does, I'm surprised his hamstrings don't go every single game.
I mean, he probably ends up injuring himself a lot, slipping on all the oil that he leaves behind when
Ah, true, to be
he's
fair.
been warming up and getting the baby oil rubbed on his arms. Honestly, one of the most interesting strategies I've seen in football is rubbing baby oil into yourself before you get on a pitch, just so opposition defenders literally can't get a hold of you. Predictions for this one then. Jamie's given us a 2-0 to Leicester. Struan, how about yourself? How do we see it going?
I've gone a 1-0 to Leicester with James Justin being my man of the match.
Oh, interesting.
I think it'll be a really solid display.
I wouldn't be opposed to that. I think you'll
Another
be
good
first
English
sub
right
for
back.
me. For the first sub for me this weekend, James Justin, I think, in case Tariq Lamptey doesn't play, because as always, Tariq Lamptey's a doubt. For me,
Another good English right back.
Another good English. I don't envy England's problem with right backs, because we've got the same problem with left backs in Scotland. So,
I've been saying we should do a swap deal for years.
Swap deal for you.
Well, not years, but
who are we getting rid of Greg Taylor for then?
take Wan-Bissaka. Doesn't seem to be getting a call up to the England team as well. Might as well have him.
Fair. For me, this one, I've gone for a Leicester win. I've gone 2-1 to Leicester. I still think our Wolves can score. I do really think they've got a group of talented footballers in their attack and play. And players like Ruben Neves and Joao Moutinho can never be counted out for having an individual moment of magic to produce something in a game. But Leicester, I feel like Barnes will be in amongst it. Vardy obviously is always going to be in amongst it. So, yeah, should be a Leicester win. But I'll say I wouldn't be surprised if Wolves do get something out of this. It's one of those hipster picks that really has potential to be one of the bigger and more entertaining games of the weekend, which is why we've put it as a premium pick. We'll come now to our second segment of the show, which is our wildcard options. These are the games that we don't have as much to talk about, but we did want to bring them up because there's a bit to mention from each of them. Starting with Southampton and versus Newcastle. Both teams have got very good results over the weekend. They are James Ward-Prowse and Callum Wilson looking to be very good, cheap English options. That doesn't matter, but very good, cheap, solid options for fantasy teams, both costing less than 7 million in midfield and attack, respectively. Struan, what do we make of this game?
The Alan Shearer derby. I think it'll be a good game. I think it's actually quite close. We were talking about it before we went live today, that their head-to-head record is incredibly close to one another. It's actually pretty crazy. You know, 38 games played against each other, they have 15 wins each, which is very close, you know. And I think it's just an interesting game. Both teams are, I've got a lot of exciting players in there. Southampton are on really good form. They're another team like Leicester who I think they do go quite under the radar, just the only difference being I think they slip up a lot more often. You know, I think they play really, really exciting football. I think Hassan Hill's done a very good job, but you know, they'll pull out some great results. Like we saw against Everton, they were absolutely fantastic. But then they could easily just slip up and fall away in a game like this to Newcastle. But I'm looking forward to this game. If I can, I think I'll be watching it on Friday night, which is tonight.
Which is tonight, yeah.
Tonight is the night.
Got a lot to look forward to tonight, then, Struan.
just thought I'd remind the listeners that it is Friday.
It is Friday night. We're not actually going to have this podcast out before the fantasy deadline, I'm realising, which is in 20 minutes. So if either of you...
Struan to blame for that one, I think.
if we hadn't talked about Hibs and Hearts for so long at the beginning.
Oh, that was it. If either of you haven't made your transfers, then get your skates on. Jamie, I've also selected Arsenal versus Aston Villa in this one. If we had the Alan Shearer derby for Southampton Newcastle, it's the Emi Martinez derby in this one. Also, a wee bit of clash between John McGinn and Kieran Tierney. The last meeting, of course, was crucial for Aston Villa in ensuring their Premier League survival. Do you think it could be a repeat of what happened in July, or is it going to be a fairly comfortable Arsenal win?
Arsenal beat Aston Villa 3-2 on the 22nd of September 2019, and I am going to go for the same scoreline this time around. John McGinn actually scored that day, so it's interesting that you bring him up. I'm going to go for the same scoreline. I'm going to go for a 3-2, and I'm going to bring Aubameyang in to my team with my free hit because he also scored that day. So 3-2 to Arsenal and Aubameyang to win. Both teams playing some relatively decent football. I think it would be fair to say Aston Villa are a bit hot and cold, but you know they still showed some positive signs in that Southampton defeat. Largely towards the end of the game, and they did make it a bit nervy, but unfortunately the start kind of cost them in that game. They were 4-0 down, I think, weren't they? So
yeah,
that kind of cost any chance that they had of picking up anything from that game. But they still scored 3 goals, so that's positive. But obviously that's 7 goals conceded in 2 games, so it's not a great sign. But I do think there'll be goals in this game, and as we know, Arsenal aren't particularly good at defending usually, although they have been a little bit better this season, as I think Raf called me out on a couple of weeks ago.
I think
now,
he
so.
Did, yeah, didn't he?
So 3-2 to Arsenal and Aubameyang to notch.
I can back that. I can definitely see that happening. For our third and final wildcard pick, there's only 3 of us today, so I will take the reins on this one. And wouldn't you know, it's the Chelsea game I've selected for myself. Funny how that works out. Chelsea are playing Sheffield United at home tomorrow, and I'm probably stupidly confident in how well this is going to go for Chelsea. Sheffield United have not had a good season whatsoever. But, I mean, you can't deny it. That
no,
is,
it's 100%. They're just bad.
That is the facts. They've not won yet, and one of their better defenders who's been playing will not be playing in this game. Jack O'Connell's been out injured, so Ethan Mpadu is coming to the starting lineup. He can't play because he is on loan from Chelsea. Mm. So I feel like especially with Hakim Ziyech's introduction to the starting 11 and how effective he has been at stretching defences and really pulling the strings from the right-hand side, I feel like it could be quite a dominant performance. It could also be a decent time to bring in a Chelsea defender for your fantasy team, but we'll get onto that in our locked-in 11 shortly. Just because Sheffield United aren't scoring goals either. Ryan Brewster hasn't really impacted that team in a way that he would have wanted to. His most influential performance to date, as in his Barbers wearing his Champions League winners medal, and I will stand by that. I just don't see this going anywhere but a Chelsea win, and I'm going to say 4-0 to Frank Lampard's Blues on Saturday afternoon, with Timo Werner scoring. I called the minute that he would score last week and I got it wrong, so so I'm not going to do the same, but I would not be surprised if Timo Werner picks up another goal or two in this one.
We can guess the half. First.
It would be first. I think first makes sense. Chelsea have scored more or less a fair few goals in the first half at least, so yeah, we'll go with that. With that brings us out of segment two into segment three, which is on our locked in 11. This is where we take you through an entire batch of players that you might consider bringing into your fantasy teams from games we've mentioned, games we haven't, and it's all to maximise your own points this coming weekend. Starting with goalkeeper and defence, for me personally, there's only two places you really need to look this weekend anyway for a goalkeeper, and they're both in London. Edouard Mendy at Chelsea and Hugo Lloris at Spurs. I don't really see a lot of clean sheets in this weekend fixtures, but Chelsea are at home to Sheffield United, as I just mentioned. Spurs are away to West Brom. I don't think either of the teams are going to give Mourinho, Spurs or Lampard, Chelsea many troubles. Is that something we can agree on, or would you like to contest that at all?
I don't disagree with that. My current goalkeeper, though, is Alex McCarthy. Struan said he thought this would be a good game tonight. I do not think this will be a good game.
Oh, no.
I am thinking this will be a very low-scoring game, and I think it will either be 0-0 or 1-0 to Southampton. I'm yet to decide. So Alex McCarthy and Kyle Walker-Peters are also in my team. So whether I keep McCarthy and possibly bring in Edouard Mendy, because I do think I have the funds to do so, or maybe keep McCarthy, get rid of Walker-Peters and bring in a Chelsea defender, as I agree, I do think Chelsea will keep a clean sheet as well against Sheffield United. But currently, Alex McCarthy is in my sticks.
Struan?
I've got Hugo Lloris as well, and I've got another French keeper in Meslier as a bench. 100% how to pronounce that, from Leeds United, because he's quite a cheap option and he's going to be a first choice, and you just never know with Leeds. Against Crystal Palace as well, you know, it's...
Could go either way.
Yeah,
that one really.
But I would stick with Hugo Lloris. I can't see West Brom scoring.
Unfortunately, both of my keepers that I have horrible fixtures, and I've used my free transfer this week on a midfielder. So I'm not expecting either my keepers to get me many points this week. But that's just the way the game goes. Sometimes you need to pick the lesser of two evils to switch out, and I have done so. In terms of defence, I think Chelsea and Spurs defenders again. Ben Chilwell is probably your best shout for Chelsea. He's amassed 33 points in his four games for Chelsea in the Premier League, I think. If I'm right with that, I think I'd seen that somewhere. So he has definitely been one of the most influential defenders in the league since he started playing for Chelsea. He is expensive. He's 5.9 million, which is premium for a defender, considering the only ones that I would really pay more than 5.5 for are Trent Alexander-Arnold or Robertson. But I think he's definitely worth it. So I would recommend Ben Chilwell, not just for this game, but for the rest of the season. It's a big call, but it had to be made. Boys, who else have we got in defence this week?
I have a back three. I have Ben White, Arthur Masuaku, and Kyle Walker-Peters. I fancy three home wins for Southampton, West Ham, and Brighton, and I fancy three clean sheets as well.
Those are all cheap defenders, so something tells me you've spent your cash further up the field for this free
Yes,
hit.
the free hit is yes, the front seven, if you like, is pretty deadly in my opinion.
Stuart, how about yourself? Are you recommending anyone for this weekend?
Well, I've just realised I've got four English right backs, and I've actually been a back five this week with Alexander Arnold, Reece James, Kyle Walker, James Justin, and I've also got Kieran Tierney.
So close to being a full Southgate, honestly.
That
would have been quite.
I've actually got a left back though.
Well done, congratulations! You've done what Scotland have, and you managed to get a left back in regardless. A couple of interesting choices. I think Trent's been up for debate a lot this season in FPL just because I think one assist and one clean sheet for him is not really justifying the 7.4 million I think people pay for him just now, and it seems that Robertson is the more sensible option, so might be worthwhile considering switching at some point if you do have the English right back. We'll move up into midfield and talk about some players that we think are going to be able to get some assists and potentially a couple of goals this week. I've selected James Maddison from Leicester. I think he got a goal on Thursday night. He got a goal last night against Braga in his return to the team. And it's been a hard battle back for him to get back to full fitness. But I do think he is the type of player that will relish a game like Wolves and the opportunity to unlock that defence from the middle of the park. I've also put down Jamie's favourite player in the world.
For
a good performance against
Player of the Month nominee.
Player of the Month nominee, Pablo Fornals, proving once and for all that Premier League players listen to this show. I think he'll have a good game. I think he's the exact kind of player that will rip Fulham apart, and Jamie will be angry as a result because of how much contempt he tends to hold for this man. I'd also put James Ward-Prowse down just as a decent option against Newcastle, $6.5 million or so, and he'll probably get on. He's taking set pieces regardless, so always a good option. Struan, how about you? Who's in your midfield this week?
I've actually got two in Jack Grealish and Aubameyang, who ironically play against each other at the weekend. Mm. I've also got a Click from Leeds on the bench playing Crystal Palace. He'll be my first sub. I think he'll be a good show. Of course, the penalty taker as well, so. Yeah, I think Aubameyang is a good shout, as it was mentioned earlier. I think they'll get the victory. And Grealish is just, he really stole points last week, so hopefully he can do it again.
Did you say you've only got two midfielders?
Yeah, I thought that, I know.
So I'm playing a 5-2-3.
I didn't know
you could do that.
No, neither did I.
Neither did I until I experimented.
Midfielders seems so strange to me in fantasy.
It looks incredibly weird to have a back five and two midfielders, and then three up.
You're going bold this week, I don't know if I like it.
Hey, I don't know if I like five at the back this season. There's been so many goals.
Keep it. That's good.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah, to be fair, I need to catch up with people somehow.
Just as I start winning.
Jamie, how about yourself?
Heung-Min Son, Hakim Ziyech, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, and Jared Bowen.
Ah, good shout.
Four midfielders. Couldn't bring myself to bring Fornals in, and no. I don't see why you would, so I went with Bowen.
Bowen's a good shout, I like that. Ziyech's probably the most influential of Chelsea's midfielders at the moment.
Well, just with Pulisic being out as well, I think I actually originally had Pulisic in, and then obviously it was announced that he wasn't going to be fit again, so
and
I brought Ziyech again.
As well.
And yeah, so he's surely going to start, isn't he, Ziyech? I considered bringing in Mount as well, actually, to be perfectly honest, just because he was cheaper. And I wasn't sure if I could use the funds. I wasn't sure whether to bring Mount in just because he was a bit cheaper as well. I could maybe use the money elsewhere. But to be honest with you, I think the attacking options I've got in this team are pretty good anyway.
Yeah, they sound like you've been able to pretty much sort your entire free hit with the funds you've had available to you, even with ZH in the team.
I think I've used it well.
Yeah, no, I would say so. Well, I suppose we'll just have to wait and see. Wait until...
yes, we shall.
Wait
we
until
shall.
Sunday night before we make a call on Jamie's success in this free hit. Finally, strikers. Struan, who's leading your line?
Harry Kane. Captain Kane.
Captain Kane.
I've also got Timo Werner. Vice-captain Timo Werner. And just Calvert-Lewin.
And just Calvert-Lewin.
Just Dominic.
That's a solid front three you've got. I like that.
I'm a bit risky with Calvert-Lewin, though. As I said, I'm predicting a United win, but I already had to make my transfer elsewhere, unfortunately.
Mm. Jamie, how about yourself? Who's getting your goals?
I've brought in Vardy. And Kane was in my team already. He keeps his place despite the free hit. And captain is Timo Werner this week.
Captain
The fraud.
Werner.
He's not. I can't really call him a fraud
Not at
anymore.
the
He's
moment,
started doing all
anyway.
right now.
He
So
started playing well. Proof
he's
again,
going to
Werner
snap back
listens.
against Sheffield United.
I don't know who to captain out of him and
Yeah.
Son.
Son usually does well away from
You know
home
what?
for
Son,
Spurs,
Son
so.
vice in case Lampard does in fact rest Werner.
Think he would. Yeah, he could start Tammy, to be fair.
He mentioned in his press conference, that was one point I wanted to make, that he'd been asked a question about resting Werner. I think someone had asked it with a bit of fantasy knowledge in tow. But his
Yeah.
exact comment was he was planning on giving Timo Werner a rest to get at Burnley, but obviously that didn't happen. He says he will look to manage his minutes in the future, but not necessarily tomorrow, particularly
Yeah.
as he is in such good form and building relationships.
Yeah, you better start
He'd better start him.
him.
I'm not wanting 9.4 million wasted in my front line.
I can't have this.
I'm starting two up front this week. I've got Werner, and I've kept Jimenez because I had to make my transfer elsewhere. I don't really like the run that Leicester, sorry, not Leicester, Wolves have coming up, and I'm probably looking to move a couple of players out. But Jimenez retains his place. Just he's always got a goal in him, regardless of who he's playing. And I have got Neil Mopé on my bench as my first sub because I don't trust him to definitely start after his ego kept him out of the starting 11 of the squad last weekend. Something we may need to implement at Energy Sport for a certain extra time host if he keeps going the way he's going. I'd also think Harry Kane's probably your best shout for goals this weekend, regardless. I mean, he's going to score against West Brom. There's not, he's like Thanos at this point. He is inevitable. So there's no point in arguing against the fact. Try and shift your money around and get Kane in. I'm not doing it. I'm an idiot for not doing it. So that's all I can really say. And with me calling myself an idiot, that's probably the best way to bring this episode of the Fantasy Ramble to an end. So we want to say thank you very much to all of you out there for listening to us today. Make sure to subscribe to the Rambles podcast feed, wherever you get yours, to make sure that new episodes show up on your feed whenever they get published. Make sure to follow us over on Twitter at Fantasy Ramble once again to see all of our host predictions for this game week's fixtures. Thank you very much to Struan and Jamie for joining me today. Make sure to check out the football roundup and extra time next week in our Scotland heavy coverage week, where we're going to be talking a lot about that playoff final against Serbia next Thursday night. Until then, my name is Jack Donnelly. This has been the Fantasy Ramble by Energy Sport. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next time.